There was to be no miracle at Lord's. Pakistan's hammering by the West Indies in their first match of the tournament all those weeks ago, costing them dear as they were pipped to a place in the semi-finals on net run rate by New Zealand. Pakistani fans could take at least some solace from a consolation win over Bangladesh at Lord's to round off their campaign. A century from Imam ul-Haq and 96 from Babar Azam, taking them to 315 for 9, before the teenage left-arm quick Shaheen Shah Afridi returned figures of 6 for 35, the best ever by a Pakistani in a World Cup, to cap a 94-run win. In other developments, Sky have confirmed that the 2019 Men's Cricket World Cup final will be shown live on a free-to-air platform if, and I can't emphasise that if enough, England qualify for the final a week on Sunday. Welcome to the Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast in partnership with Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of memories since 1979. I'm your host, Joe Harmon. With me today, I think only a few weeks ago after you last came on, Lizzie, but it feels a lot longer than that, it's Elizabeth Ammon, reporter for The Times.
Hello.
You've just hot-footed it over from Lord's. Pakistan did the important bit, won the toss, but then couldn't rack up the 450 they needed or so to make a game of it.
No, I mean, it looked like they might with that second wicket partnership, and Babar Azam, isn't he lovely to watch?
He is.
And it looked like they might, you know, get 350 plus, 380, and then there was a little faint hope, but it was always a massively ridiculous long shot, wasn't it?
It was never happening, was it?
No, it was never happening.
The way they started so slow, you obviously kind of put Pakistani fans into meltdown on Twitter, but the game was gone before today, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. And they were never going to smash that world record for winning margin. It was always a long shot. Although I have to say, it didn't dampen anybody's spirits at Lord's.
It
was
an
absolutely cracking atmosphere. It really was. It was so loud. I mean, it was just loud in the press box, loud outside. It was just so loud, sort of non-stop. I mean, it doesn't, there's no, you know, normally you get a sort of lull.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no lull. Loud all day.
And you said it was a great day at Lord's all round. I think that was your moment of the day.
Yeah, my moment of the day was actually seeing Kumar Sangakkara sitting for, it must have been an hour, with the school children that had been invited in to sit to watch from the pavilion. There were sort of over 200 young school children watching from the inner sanctum of the Lord's Pavilion, because MCC had been, you know, really quite progressive, really, and decided it was much better to relax their rules and let other people into the pavilion rather than have an empty pavilion. There hadn't been a great membership take-up of this game, unsurprisingly, really. So they relaxed their rules. They relaxed their dress code rules, because some of the kids were not in shirt and tie, obviously. They were in their school polo shirts. But it was really great to see. They looked like they were really enjoying themselves. There were some pictures of them in the long room, and the players, as they came out, stopped and, you know, chatted to them and stuff. It was
great.
Really lovely, really lovely. And Sangakkara looked like he was really enjoying his conversation with them. So hats off to the MCC, that was a really good thing.
Was he doing some coaching with them as well? He was just chatting to them?
Oh no, he sat there chatting to them outside, but he looked like he was really engaged in a conversation with a group of sort of three young girls, actually. It was good to see.
And that's, of course, his kind of temporary home for the next year or so.
It is. He takes over the presidency soon, I think at the end of the summer.
I think that's right, isn't it? Yeah. So my moment of the day came from the match itself. Actually, my moment of the day was speaking to Marcus Trzaskowski a few hours ago about his defining moments of his career for the New Magazine. But this is a...
Did you get emotional? Because I
did
done.
A little bit. I did. I mean, he's always been so lovely to talk to. And yeah, just recalling some of those great moments was quite nice. But anyway, that's for the magazine. We are going to focus on the World Cup today. Yeah, my moment was a brilliant caught and bowled by Mustafizur Rahman, who took his second consecutive 5-wicket haul. And I think he's been brilliant in this World Cup. He's finished with 20 wickets behind just Mitchell Stark in the wicket takers list, and I think he's really shown himself alongside Stark and Bumrah to be the kind of premier death bowler in the world. And he came through 4 years ago, I think it was now, where he took 11 wickets in his first two ODIs against India, and they had that brilliant start and then faded a little bit. And he took all those wickets with that off cutter, and I wondered, maybe have batsmen started to figure him out? Was it a kind of a maybe different type of bowler, but a Jhanta Mendes situation where actually batsmen had figured him out and he wasn't going to kind of kick on? But I think that was more fitness issues, and we've seen over the course of this World Cup that he's a special talent and going to be around for very, very long time, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And he seems to have, his game evolved. His gaming, I mean, he's young, isn't he? And his game is evolving and he's learning. And Steve Rose mentioned him in a press conference, one of the millions I've been to in the last 6 weeks. Just, you know, singled him out to say how hard he works and how much he thinks about the game.
Yeah, so that moment itself was, he took if you didn't see it, it was his fourth of 5 wickets. Shadab Khan trying to clip it into the leg side, leading edge. Mustafizur diving to his left, took a one-handed catch just kind of millimetres from the ground and held held on and then rounded off his five for in his next over, I think. So that was a really nice end to the tournament for a fantastic young bowler who I think we're going to see a lot of for a long time to come. Let's talk about Pakistan. Predictably unpredictable in this tournament. It's a little bit hard to know what to make of them. They've beaten two semi-finalists. They've just missed out on the semi-finals and they've got thrashed by a side who haven't won for, well, have only beaten Afghanistan in the tournament in West Indies, aside from Pakistan. So do you think they've had a good tournament?
I don't think they have, actually. No. I think given their talent and clearly their ability, what you've just been saying about being able to beat the best in the world, I think they'll be disappointed, actually. And I think a lot of us thought they might go on to win the thing at some point. You know, a lot of Pakistan fans seem to be incredibly frustrated by the net run rate thing and by how they didn't qualify. But the argument back is, well, don't get bowled out for 100 by a team that that didn't then go on to win. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously feel hard done by as well in the fact that their game against Sri Lanka was rained off, whereas New Zealand against India was rained off, and you would have expected Pakistan to beat Sri Lanka and you'd have expected India to beat New Zealand. But we don't know those things would have happened. You can't, these scenarios can't play out exactly as you
know. And you have to come into a 6.5-week tournament in England expecting there to be a bit of weather and sort of try and win every game that you are out on the park for, really.
I think also expectations of Pakistan, because they beat England, they were raised quite quickly. But at the start of the tournament, I don't think people fancied them at all. I mean, our Pakistan correspondent, Amin Naqvi, tipped them for the wooden spoon.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
wow.
So he thought that they had no chance of replicating the kind of Champions Trophy of 2 years ago, whereas I thought, well, basically, I thought, who knows?
Well, exactly. I mean, I thought, actually, you know, they were so comprehensively beaten by England in that bilateral series, but actually, we saw that the pitches were not like that at all. I thought actually
it wasn't much of a warm-up series, was it, in the sense that they were being very different pitches,
completely different conditions, almost like playing in a different country. And I think as I saw the pitches being not at all like that, I thought actually this might help Pakistan. But yeah, they were, I mean, gosh, how frustrating must it be to be a Pakistan fan?
Well, they do seem frustrated, and obviously they kind of feel every emotion as these things go through. Good to see Shaheen Shah Afridi in the wickets today. I mean, he's obviously a massive talent. Had a difficult, that warm-up series we mentioned, he got carted around a bit. No real shame in that, because most of the bowlers did. And then lost his place at the start of the World Cup, but he's come back and taken 13 wickets in his last three matches, including six today. It's only just 19. Pakistan have found another one, haven't they?
Yeah. Oh, they keep producing them, don't they? They keep finding them.
He's left armers as well.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's what's so great, isn't it, that even though they have all these, you know, challenges to overcome about not playing at home and the resources and their, you know, their first class system and this and the other, they keep producing players, and that's really encouraging. It's just putting together a complete performance, isn't it?
And the good thing with these young guys like Shaheen Shah Afridi is he's already played Test cricket. He is ready to be a Test cricketer. That is clearly kind of at the forefront of his mind, perhaps partly because Pakistanis aren't allowed to play in the IPL, has narrowed their options a little bit. But he will be seeing him in all formats for a very long time. He's not just a white ball bowler by any means at all, is he?
No, absolutely. I mean, he's clearly got a lot of skill, and he's clearly another kind of thinking cricketer, actually. He was very smart today.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's talk about Shakib Al Hasan, who has just been phenomenal.
Oh, extraordinary.
I mean, I think a lot of Bangladeshi fans get frustrated with particularly Western fans being constantly surprised by how good he is. And I'm not going to fall into that trap, because I did know he was very, very, very good, a superb player. But I think you'd have to admit he's gone above and beyond in this tournament, hasn't he?
Particularly we're averaging 86
points. I've got some numbers. Let's do some numbers. 606 runs at 87, 200s, 550s in eight innings, lowest score of 41 in the tournament, strike rate of 96, so he's scoring them quickly. Currently the leading run scorer in the tournament, only Sachin in 2003 and Matthew Hayden in 2007 have scored more runs in a single World Cup. And you can throw in 11 wickets too. Obviously Bangladesh aren't going to feature in the semi-finals, and there's some pretty big games still to come. But at this stage, should he be the forerunner for the front runner for the player of the tournament, even though Bangladesh aren't going to play in the kind of crunch matches?
I mean, he won't be, because
it's not fair though, is it? It's not his fault.
No, absolutely. I mean, he should be absolutely discussed. It's even, you know, the big names that we talk about in this, you know, Johnny Best, David Warner, they're not in that sort of form.
No, and also they're not carrying it's unfair to say he's carrying Bangladesh, because that used to be the case and it's no longer the case, but there is still a huge amount of pressure on him at number three, perhaps in a similar way to Kane Williamson with New Zealand, to hold that batting unit together. And Tamim hasn't really fired as you'd expect him to, and he just looks like the pressure doesn't get to him at all. And that's what struck me about his innings, everything's looked so easy for him in this tournament.
Yeah, really calm. And the extraordinary consistency of those numbers is just, that's phenomenal, really, isn't it?
Well, I'd hope to see him certainly in the mix for player of the tournament when you come to it. But I guess if someone stands up in the final who's already had a good tournament and wins it for their country, then perhaps they'll be justified in taking that award.
That's going to be David Warner.
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't say that. Don't say that. I actually said that at the start of the tournament, but sort of semi-joking, and now it's all looking rather real. Same question for Bangladesh, really. How do we think they've gone this tournament? Because they're going to finish 7th or possibly 8th if South Africa beat Australia. They've given us some great entertainment. Their fans, I think, would agree, have been the best in the tournament. And they've got a lot of kind of pats on the back. But actually, have they, in terms of pure results, have they underperformed here?
Yeah, I think they have, actually. Yes, I wasn't expecting them. I was sort of expecting them to pick up a couple of, you know, probably good wins, actually. And I was expecting Sri Lanka to get the wooden spoon. So it has been disappointing. But they have, they came into the tournament with kind of carrying the events in Christchurch, didn't they? And Steve Rhodes said himself, I was worried I wasn't going to be able to get them back together and back in the right place as a team. And they've done it themselves. You know, they actually have. They've got some brotherhood, was the word he used. But, you know, that shouldn't be underestimated. They went through an extremely traumatic experience, and that was not that long before the tournament.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's had an effect. And
they seem incredibly unified as a team. They certainly give that impression.
Yeah, and that's what Steve Rhodes said, is actually, you know, it's really kind of brought them together. It is disappointing they haven't had, you know, a couple of wins, really, because they're good enough.
And they've got, I mean, Mortaza, who I get, has he announced anything on his future yet? I can't imagine he's going to play beyond this. He's also a politician, isn't he, in Bangladesh? I think he's won a seat. Who's been around, I mean, forever, almost literally as long as I've been watching cricket, he's been playing, which is kind of a scary thought. McCullum on commentary was saying he's one of the best leaders he's ever played alongside, which is quite a compliment coming from McCullum.
Yeah, and that's probably really important for a side like Bangladesh, that, you know, they've got sort of, you know, young talent and old heads, and it's really important to have a good leader. It could be interesting to see where they go from here, really.
Well, he won't be an easy one to replace as captain, because Shakib's had a go in the past, so is Mushfiqur. You probably don't want either of them having the responsibility of captain. That's a big hole to fill. I know Mehdi Hasan did it under 19 level. Perhaps he's the one to do it, but we'll see. So that's enough on today, I think. But before we finish, I wanted to return to that news I mentioned to the top of the show, that the final, if England are in it, will be shown on free to air. Sky reportedly in talks with Channel 4, according to The Guardian, or at least that's where I read it. Lizzie, is this too little too late, or should we just be thankful that we're getting some cricket on free to air finally?
I think we should. I think it's a good thing. I think it shouldn't be underestimated that this is actually, Sky will take a commercial hit for this. You know, their advertising revenue will take a hit, and it's not a decision they had to take.
Although pressure was building.
They were big enough and ugly enough to resist pressure, aren't they? And they
didn't. Liam Plunkett was the deciding.
That man can do anything. But you know, they paid a lot of money for those rights, you know, and they are a commercial organisation, and you sort of think, well, you know, their business is to make money, but they have taken the decision that it's in the interest of the game, and good PR for them, I suppose.
Well, it's also in the interest of themselves as well, in the sense that they still have the rights to cricket, and if more people start watching cricket, then they might want to get Sky to watch the cricket. So I don't think we should put this down as an entirely selfless decision.
No.
They're doing all right themselves as well. I wanted to just ask you about the visibility of the World Cup in general, because you've got a young son who likes
loves cricket.
He liked cricket well before the World Cup. Presumably.
Yeah, but he loves Test cricket.
Okay.
And that didn't come from me.
Right. Interesting. But have you got the impression from, well, not so much from him, but perhaps his friends and around schoolyards, is the word spreading? I spoke to Colin Graves briefly at the start of this tournament, and he was kind of banging on about the legacy and we want kids playing in the street and we want this to last for years and years afterwards. Is that happening?
Well, James and his friends are talking about it, and they do watch the clips. I mean, that, you know, I think
is that on Twitter, or
they watch them on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube, you know, BBC they watch the clips, and actually that's enough for them, really. You know, they watch 10 clips and then they go and play FIFA or something, but they know what's happened, and they say, did you see that catch? Or, you know, I hear them talking to each other and they say, did you see back at Stokes's catch? So, but I am in middle class southwest London where cricket's already a thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's any sort of barometer at all, really.
How about when you've been travelling around the country, going from ground to ground, do you get the sense that cities are kind of embracing the World Cup?
I think they have, actually. I mean, it depends on what our expectation levels are, but the fan zones have all been packed. The grounds have all been, you know, they've been full apart from the empty corporate seats and stuff. you know, that, and so I think it has in a sense captured cricket fans. I just don't know how many non-cricket fans it's captured. Now, there are plenty of cricket fans. The ACB are forever telling us there are 10 million cricket fans, even if they don't watch English cricket or county cricket. There are 10 million people who like cricket, and that's quite a lot of people, if you ask me.
Yeah. Is there an argument as well to say that we don't really know yet, that England's kind of ploughing through a lengthy group stage was never necessarily going to grab the nation, certainly of non-cricket fans, in the way that we maybe wanted them to, and that it's actually semi-finals and finals that matter to people who don't necessarily care about specific sports, but like sporting events, like major events.
Absolutely. And I think we will start to see now, particularly if England win on Thursday, I think then we will see, oh look, England are in a World Cup final. And that, let's face it, that really doesn't happen in many sports very often, does it?
It doesn't.
So I think we will see it. I mean, I think there have been some unfair comparisons with the Women's Football World Cup. It is very different getting people to sit and engage with 90 minutes of football on a Sunday tea time when they're at home sitting in front of the telly anyway, or it's on in the background.
The timing's all been perfect.
Yeah, they have all been.
The tournament being in France.
Absolutely. Expecting people to engage with 48 days of 8.5 hours, you're not comparing like with like at all, are you?
Yeah. Okay, well, we shall see. We could certainly do with an England win on Thursday. That would that would help. Obviously, before we end today's show, Australia playing South Africa tomorrow in the later game, India Sri Lanka in the earlier one. Australia will be desperate to win that, right? To play on, so they get the kind of the triple whammy of they play on Tuesday, so get a bit more rest. Mm-hmm. They play at Old Trafford, which probably suits their quicks a bit better. Yep. And they get to play New Zealand, who are
and
obviously struggling.
Travel.
So do you see any chance of a South African shock there? You were saying Glenn Maxwell.
May rest Glenn Maxwell after he got hit on the arm by a Pat Cummins bouncer. Mitchell Starc finished off Sean Marsh in the nets, and then Steve Smith hurt his finger, and so did Jason Berendorf.
That's like absolute sounded carnage like in the Australian
carnage
nets.
Training session. Which Justin
sounds a bit like old school. With
Justin Langer said, "Train hard, play easy." Okay, well, you're very much taking that to extremes.
Sort of Lily Pepper and Kim Hughes back in the day, sort of style.
They might well sit out Glenn Maxwell just in case, because they'll obviously want him back for the final. Yeah, New Zealand will have new Lockie Ferguson back, which is good
That's
news.
That's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, really big news for them, because they were very disappointing.
They were, and poor old Southey, who got kind of went the distance, who hadn't played so far in the World Cup. So you'd think Lockie Ferguson in for Southie for them is definitely strengthening their team, isn't it?
It's difficult to see beyond an Australia winning that semi-final if they do make that semi-final. But South Africa, I mean, bizarre. What a disappointing tournament.
It has been, and it seems, in a long tournament, seemed particularly particularly long for them. Obviously, because we kind of knew they were knocked out so early on.
Yes, because they lost, you know, their first three quite badly as well, and didn't look at all like they could turn it around right from the word go, really.
Well, perhaps they can leave with a kind of slither of optimism if they can beat Australia tomorrow. We shall see. That's the end of the show for today on the penultimate day of the World Cup group stage, a day that some cricket journalists thought would never come. Not here at Wisden, though, we are just getting started. I'll be back tomorrow, of course, joined by Australian writer Sam Perry. Always nice to hear from Sam. He's not really fancied Australia from the start. Has he changed his tune? This has been the Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast in partnership with Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of memories since 1979. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or any of the other usual platforms.